literally being chased by people who want to end his very life, he writes a psalm of confidence, not of fear, not of worry, but confidence. And this morning, as we sit in Psalm 57, I pray that we would ask the Lord to give us the same confidence that David wrote about. So let me read from Psalm 57. To the choir master, according to Do Not Destroy, a miktam of David, when he fled from Saul in the cave. Be merciful to me, O God, be merciful to me, for in you my soul takes refuge. In the shadow of your wings I will take refuge till the storms of destruction pass by. I cry out to God Most High, to God who fulfills his purpose for me. He will send from heaven and save me. He will put to shame him who tramples on me. God will send out his steadfast love and his faithfulness. My soul is in the midst of lions. I lie down amid fiery beasts. The children of man, whose teeth are spears and arrows, whose tongues are sharp swords, be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let your glory be over all the earth. They set a net for my steps. My soul was bowed down. They dug a pit in my way, but they have fallen into it themselves. My heart is steadfast, O God. My heart is steadfast. I will sing and make melody. Awake, my glory. Awake, O harp and lyre. I will awake the dawn. I will give thanks to you, O Lord, among the peoples. I will sing praises to you among the nations. For your steadfast love is great to the heavens, your faithfulness to the clouds. Be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let your glory be over all the earth. This is the word of the Lord. Now, I think that it goes without saying that the word chaos is a rather apt description of this year. I don't know about you, but for myself, as was mentioned, I had been serving as the interim pastor for Two Rivers Presbyterian in North Charleston, and as I was stepping out of that role, I figured I'd make a transition that felt natural for me. I had spent the last 20 years doing youth ministry in various forms. I knew that I loved students. I knew that I loved teaching, and so I figured I would take that experience and get my teaching certification to step into being a high school teacher myself. And so in the process, I began working on that certification. I signed up to become a substitute teacher to get to know local schools and teachers and principals. And 3 weeks into that process, the entire world shut down. And I quickly had to learn how to manage Google Classroom and things like that for my second grade son and my kindergarten daughter. And we still had two younger children to manage at home as well. It had been a very chaotic year, losing work, losing income. And sometimes the pressure felt overwhelmingly crushing. My wife and I had questions, that's definitely sure, but we never doubted that God was working something big, even in our own family and in our own lives, because we had to remember that the same God that we were praying to was the God who, as I grew up as someone whose father was not involved in my life, my parents divorced when I was a young child, but the Lord put men in my life to speak truth and compassion in my life. He put youth pastors in my life that taught me what it meant to be a godly man and a loving husband and compassionate father. As someone who grew up struggling with depression and even at times thoughts of struggling with suicide, I was praying to a God who put people into my life who spoke compassion and gospel truth and reminded me that I am part of something bigger than my own struggle. I was praying to the same God that when my mom passed away as I was finishing seminary, He put church family and friends in my life that reminded me of the Lord's compassion and spoke tender truth to my broken heart. And when I lost my job from a church in 2018, I was praying to the same God who provided work and a home for us to come back to the Charleston area and begin putting roots down here and eventually led us into serving at Two Rivers Presbyterian. If anything, the thing that I was reminded of, that the only thing more consistent than the chaos in our lives was the presence of the Lord in the midst of chaos. It wasn't the removal of chaos, but He was with me and my family in the midst of chaos. I wasn't running for my life like David was at the time of this psalm, but I definitely understand that feeling of uncertainty, that feeling of what is tomorrow going to bring. Even at this point now in this year, we find ourselves asking that very question, what is going to happen tomorrow? But Psalm 57 became a source of comfort for us in our struggle. Because for God's people today, Psalm 57 reminds us that Christians can have confidence when they pray. This isn't a confidence of name it and claim it prosperity gospel. This isn't, well, if you just pray hard enough or if you do enough good things for the kingdom, the Lord's going to deliver and bless you. No, this isn't that. This is a confidence that God, the Lord that we serve, the God who spoke the universe into creation, is larger than our struggles and our circumstances, and that His glory will shine through the dark clouds of destruction. And we see that in the following ways. First, in verses 1 through 3, you can have confidence when you pray, when you present your plea. When you present your plea in verses 1 through 3. Second, in verses 4 through 6, you can have confidence when you pray, when you present your problem. When you present your problem in verses 4 through 6. And lastly, in verses 7 through 11, you can have confidence when you pray, when you present your praise. Present your praise in verses 7 through 11. Now, Psalm 57 opens with instructions to the choir master, which means that this was specifically written for God's people to sing. It's written according to Do Not Destroy. This is likely an indication of the tune or the meter, the way the song was supposed to be sung. It is a miktam of David. That's the style of song. That this wasn't just a silent prayer, but that this was an exuberant cry of confidence. And it gives us context by describing when he fled from Saul in the cave. David includes these instructions for the choir master because as God's people sing this song, they need to remember, you and I need to remember that God's people should not just sing and cry out in times of peace and tranquility and when everything is calm. But just like we sing in times of peace, God's people can sing confidence in times of chaos. And so David shows us that as God's people, you can have confidence when you present your plea. Look back to verse 1. Be merciful to me, O God. Be merciful to me. For in you my soul takes refuge. In the shadow of your wings I will take refuge till the storms of destruction pass by. His hope, his strength, his refuge itself, it's not in the caves that he's hiding in. It's not in his own ability to outmaneuver or outrun Saul and his men. His refuge is in the Lord alone. That's where he finds his rest and his hope and his peace. In you, I will take refuge. I cry out to God Most High, to God who fulfills His purpose to me. He's addressing God's position. He's not saying, God, I know that You've anointed me to be the next ruler, the next king. I know that I'm Your man. No, He's addressing God and His position, His authority. This is the God who fulfills His purpose. This is who God is. And He is a God who does not abandon His people. He will send from heaven and save me. He will put to shame him who tramples on me. God will send out His steadfast love and His faithfulness. This isn't David just meekly praying, oh, I really hope God does this. If I just prayed hard enough, hopefully God will do this. No, he is confidently praying He will do this. And why? He says why. It's because of His steadfast love. In the original Hebrew, the word for steadfast love is this Hebrew word chesed. And that word has a lot of baggage. We lose a lot of that in the English translation. But this word chesed implies a covenant faithfulness. That this is a God who made a covenant promise with His people and that He is the one who fulfills it. This is a God who does not break His promises and He is the faithful one. And that is the love that David is resting in. That is the steadfast love that David is sure that the Lord will show up and He will provide. This is the same faith that we see from David in 1 Samuel chapter 17, when Saul is the king and they're facing off against the Philistines, and then this little guy named Goliath shows up. And all of the warriors of Israel are terrified. They are literally hiding from this warrior. And Goliath is mocking God. And David shows up and he will not allow it. He will not allow this Philistine to tear down the name of the holy God. And in 1 Samuel 17, 34 through 37, it's recorded, David said to Saul, "Your servant used to keep sheep for his father. And when there came a lion or a bear and took a lamb from the flock, I went after him and struck him and delivered it out of his mouth. And if he arose against me, I caught him by his beard and struck him and killed him. Your servant has struck down both lions and bears, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be like one of them, for he has defied the armies of the living God." And David said, "The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine." And Saul said to David, "Go, and the Lord be with you." Now, David isn't glossing over the difficulty of what he went through, and he's definitely not sugarcoating the conflict that he is walking into. But he is confident that the Lord has shown up before against lions and bears. Oh my. But he is confident that the same Lord that showed up before will show up again against this Philistine who is mocking the living God. And Psalm 57 says that the Lord shows up amidst the storms of destruction and that God is our refuge. That is the confidence that David is relying in, that God has shown up before and He will show up again. And so I need to ask you, what do you need to remember today? I don't know what kind of struggles you or your family might be going through, but I want to encourage you to think back. Think back to where God has shown up in your life in the past. Reflect like David did. Perhaps there was a time where income was tight and you didn't know if you were going to have money to pay your bills, or you didn't know if you were going to be able to buy groceries that week, but somehow miraculously God showed up and delivered in a way that you had not expected. Maybe it was a time in your life when you felt like you had no hope left to give. And yet someone came into your life with just a specific conversation that reminded you of the faithfulness of God for His people. Maybe it was a time when you felt unloved, isolated, and abandoned. And someone spoke the compassion and mercy of a God who takes the outsider and makes them His children. I don't know what kind of struggles you've had in the past or what you're going through now, but I encourage you to remember, where has God shown up before? Because He will show up again. Like David, look back and remember where God has been. Pray in that confidence. Not in your own effort, not in your own ability or your own wit or understanding. Pray in the confidence that you are praying to a God who does not abandon His people. And as you present your plea, pray in the same confidence when you present your problem. As we see in Psalm 57, David is honest with his struggle. He's very poetic with his language, yes, but he's honest. Picking up in verse 4, "My soul is in the midst of lions. I lie down amid fiery beasts. The children of man whose teeth are spears and arrows, whose tongues are sharp swords." These are people who are seeking to destroy him physically, to speak destruction into his life. This isn't a description of inconvenience. David isn't mildly inconvenienced by these people that are pursuing him. He is in true danger for his very life. There are enemies seeking to destroy him, but he doesn't sugarcoat it. He's honest about his struggle. And he gives himself an attitude check, starting in the next verse. "Be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let your glory be over all the earth." He stops to remind himself that even though his very life is in danger, he's reminding himself where true authority lies. Not in his own hand, not in his strength or his abilities, but in the glory of God that is over all the earth. Yes, his life is in danger, but he's trusting in the God that is over all of creation, including his enemies. "They set a net for my steps. My soul was bowed down. They dug a pit in my way, but they have fallen into it themselves." He's describing the burden and the pressure that he feels, that his very soul itself is bowed down and cannot stand. But yet when his enemies dig a pit for him, they fall in. That their pursuit and their destruction, they are laying waste to themselves. There's no need for him to seek revenge at his own hand because they are doing it to themselves. We see David's honesty as he presents his problem. He's not trying to pretend that, well, you know, this is all just going to go away in a couple of weeks. Everything's going to be fine. No, he's honest about the danger that pursues him. We see in 1 Samuel chapter 20 that as Saul is pursuing David, David finds solace and comfort in his best friend, Jonathan, Saul's son. And Jonathan is trying to comfort David and say, well, everything's going to be okay. But David, again, brings his honesty with his struggle as he tells Jonathan, "Your father knows well that I have found favor in your eyes." And he thinks, "Do not let Jonathan know this, lest he be grieved. But truly, as the Lord lives and as your soul lives, there is but a step between me and death." David is honest with his description an admission of his struggle. And he presents it before the Lord in confidence, because that is what God's people are called to do. Bring your struggles, honestly, bring your struggles to the God who is bigger than your struggles. Don't pretend that they're not there. It's okay to admit that there are difficult things in your life. There is no shame in admitting that there are struggles in front of you and behind you, because our hope and our trust is in the God who is bigger than those struggles. Even at an interpersonal level, things cannot be addressed unless they are spoken of. Perhaps there's a coworker or a classmate that just irritates the fool out of you. That neighbor, that their dog just won't stay off of your lawn. Maybe it's a dear friend or a spouse who has wounded you with their actions or their words. Maybe it's even the struggle of being honest with your own self, trying to deal with your own struggle, but you're afraid to be honest with yourself. You cannot address the struggles and the fears and the dangers if you're not able to even say them. And that's at a human level. But when we come before God in prayer and praise, you and I are bringing our hearts before an infinite God. And I invite you to bring not just your praise, bring your fears, bring your struggles, bring your doubts, bring all the baggage that your heart is carrying and lay it before the throne of God in confidence, because this is the God over the heavens and the earth. This is the God who spoke and all of reality happened. This is the God over relationships, the God of mercy and forgiveness. Come to Him in confidence and be honest with the things that plague your heart. And lastly, as you bring your pleas and your problems with heartfelt honesty, you can have confidence when you present your praise. Look at what happens, because remember, David had just said that his soul was bowed down, feeling pressured under the burden and weight of destruction. And yet in verse 7 he says, "My heart is steadfast, O God. My heart is steadfast. I will sing and make melody. Awake my glory." In light of God's position, in light of how God has interacted with his people throughout history, David's heart is fixated on praise. It is steadfast and focused, not on the destruction and chaos around him, but it is focused and fixated on praising the God who does not abandon his people. "Awake my glory, awake, O harp and lyre, I will awake the dawn." He's not just saying, "Oh, well, I'm going to put on some happy music and dance around." No, he's crying out to his whole person, every fiber of his being, "Wake up." This is why we sing praise songs and sing these songs when we come together, or if you listen to them in your car, listen to them at home. This is why we sing songs of praise and adoration to the Lord, because we are crying to our soul, "Wake up. Remember this God who steps into creation to deliver his people." Sing praise so loud that it wakes up the dawn. I don't know if you remember a video from a couple of years ago, but there was this woman named Lakeisha Bell, and she was going through cancer therapy and treatment, and there was this bell that, when you're leaving the hospital after your final treatment, that you're supposed to ring the bell as a way of saying, like, I'm the next person leaving here cancer-free. And when she was leaving, she didn't just give a simple ding-a-ling-a-ling. Like, it wasn't just this calm ringing of a bell, but she's out there with her whole being just, yeah, ringing that bell, bang, bang. Like, she was excited every ounce of her being was crying out in glory, "What was trying to kill me is gone, and I have life." That is the joy of our soul crying out to God when we sing these praise songs. "Wake up my soul. I will give thanks to you, O Lord, among the peoples, and I will sing praises to you among the nations." This isn't just a song for Israel. This is a song to the Gentiles. An invitation for all of creation to see this is the God who redeems his people, and he can redeem you too. "I will sing your praises, O God, and I will invite everyone to join in. For your steadfast love is great to the heavens, your faithfulness to the clouds. Be exalted, O God, above the heavens, and let your glory be over all the earth." We see that chesed word again, that covenant faithfulness, that steadfast love extends not just over the nation of Israel, not just where God's people physically are, but it's over all, everything, every bit and ounce of creation to the heavens themselves. God, let your name be exalted over the heavens, and let your glory be over all of creation. This is the same confidence that Job had in Job 19, that even as everything was literally taken from him, that as he sits in the midst of the ruins of his life, Job still worships, saying, "For I know my Redeemer lives." This is the same confidence that Paul has in Philippians chapter 1, that "I am sure of this, that he who began a good work in you will bring it to completion at the day of Jesus Christ." This is a confidence that rests in a God who never relents in his love for his people. Have you seen someone who has experienced that love for the first time? Do you remember the joy that you felt in your own heart when you experienced that love for the first time? Not just memorizing a catechism, not just memorizing Bible verses, but when you truly experience the joy of the love, knowing that you were dead in your sin, or as Scripture calls you, an enemy of God. And that this God sends his own Son to step into a broken, sinful creation, to take your sin upon himself, to have it nailed to the cross and die on the cross with him. And that as he arose 3 days later in victory over sin and death, that the victory of Jesus Christ took you from an enemy of God and makes you a child of the holy living God. That you are clothed in the righteousness and work of Jesus Christ. Not your own effort, not your own ability, but his work, his faithfulness. And you are given a status as a child of the holy living God. This is the God who does not abandon his people. And he invites you to come before his throne as his child, to bring your pleas, to bring your problems. Be honest with your struggles and your fears and your doubts. Rest in the knowledge that his covenant faithfulness lasts forever. And cry out in a praise so loud that every person, every ounce of creation hears the glory of God, and that the dawn itself wakes up eager to see the glory of God. I don't know what your struggles are today. Obviously, we have a lot of struggles this year. But I don't know what you are personally dealing with. I don't know what storms of destruction may loom on your horizon. But I want to ask you, are you going to attempt to face that struggle yourself pulling yourself up by your own bootstraps, as it were? Or will you present your plea to God that in the midst of the chaos surrounding you, will you find refuge in His presence? Are you going to avoid the reality of your struggle and just try to sugarcoat it and pretend it's not really as bad as it truly is? Or will you present your problems to God with honesty, trusting that the Lord we serve is bigger than your problems ever could be? Will you dwell in your own conflict and chaos, feeling overwhelmed and focusing only on your own self and struggle? Or will you focus your attention on God and honestly and joyfully present your praise, resting in the joy of His relentless love for you? Which will you choose? How will you live?